For starters, can you tell me, just give some background on what the Office of Corporate Relations does?
Sure. We were formed about 3.5 years ago. Our job is to basically be the front door for business and industry to the university. So our job is we work with companies to help them connect with the various resources that the university has that might be of relevance to them. Another significant piece of what we do, it turns out, is actually kind of promoting that, because it turns out a lot of companies don't actually know that they may have ways they can leverage the university resources. So it's things like hiring graduates, finding interns, working with one of our many centers and consortia, continuing executive education, tech transfer, that sort of thing. But each company has its own set of needs, and of course what we try to do is kind of custom fit that. So a big part of our job is that kind of matchmaking sort of role. A third part of what we do, which is really mostly my job, involves working to foster entrepreneurship, and in particular that takes the form of helping companies that are just getting started based on ideas coming out of the university or research accomplishments in the university. So I help those companies get started. I also work with the financial community, which is often a key part of getting those companies started. So it really works both ways. From the financial community standpoint, we help those investors find useful high-tech investments. From the standpoint of the startup companies, we help them make the connections they need to really grow.
Can you think of an example of how you've connected investors with companies?
Well, sure. We actually we're just putting a program together that will take place in Milwaukee on September 24th. It's the opening for the BioMed America Venture Conference. We have a series of 17 companies that will be presenting 3-minute elevator pitches. In our office here, we lined up most of the companies from Madison. Turns out Madison actually dominates that group of companies. Something like 11 out of the 17 are from Madison or Wisconsin. I think we have one from Milwaukee and the rest from Madison. So we help connect, we help those companies prepare their executive summaries, prepare their 3-minute pitches, and then we also marketed this event to the angel and venture capital investors. So we've, of course, done all this in partnership with the Wisconsin Angel Network, with the Mid-America Healthcare Investor Network, and the whole thing is actually a regional event organized by the Midwest Research University Network.
Is it mostly angels that invest in the small startup companies?
Yeah, pretty much. The startup companies are very unstructured, and for the most part, the venture capital industry, well, first of all, only about 2%, 2 to 3% of total venture capital investment goes to what they call seed investment. But even there, it's a fairly unusual venture capital player that is interested in actually putting a company together. Usually they like to buy into a management team, buy into an existing business plan, maybe a plan that's actually got some proof of concept. In contrast, coming out of the university here, we really have companies that aren't quite at that stage. They're just putting the company together. They have a very cool technology maybe, but it's maybe not all that clear exactly how they're going to make a product out of that technology. They often need professional help, and often the kinds of investors that are best suited for that are angel investors, often because they've been entrepreneurs themselves, so they kind of know how to put these things together, often also because they're just willing to take on a little more of the risk than a venture capital company would be willing to, maybe because there's a social issue. Some angel investors, for example, maybe will want to invest in a company that has a cancer cure because maybe a family member or someone has had, you know, that kind of a problem. So they want to really move the technology ahead.
Do angel are angel investors more likely to invest in their backyards too versus venture?
That's typically the case. They like to know who they're investing in. So clearly, that's got a preference for somebody that's close by. It's not absolutely universal. There are angel investors who will come across opportunities that are maybe halfway across the country, mm-hmm. but because of the maybe connections they have personally with the CEO, maybe because of a close associate, another investor who has those associations, that's possible. But you're right, generally angel investing is a local phenomenon. We're starting to see, because the angels also need to put a fair number of dollars into some of these early technology companies that have a long road before they become profitable. Because of that, we need to have more angels involved. And as you start getting more angels involved, you start looking further abroad, further outside the immediate 50-mile radius maybe. And actually, our office is doing some things to kind of help on that front. We have a number of good angel groups here in Wisconsin. We have the Wisconsin Angel Network, which is a statewide organization designed to kind of help put angels from different parts of the state in touch. We've been working with angel investors in Illinois to bring some of those investors, kind of clue them into some of the opportunities here, and it diversifies their investment opportunities while at the same time it brings additional money to companies that we have here. We also, because of our work with the local Wisconsin angels, they sometimes find having access to a broader deal flow is a good idea too. So they've actually been interested in participating in that effort. And that one is called the Illinois Business Investor Forum, but it's turning into more of a Midwest investor forum because we have now Madison investors involved. There's a likelihood of bringing in some Western Michigan investors. Hmm. So it's becoming more of a regional activity.
What does it take to be part of an angel group?
Key requirement is the angel must be an accredited investor. That's a kind of a technical term that is associated with the Securities Exchange Commission. It basically means a high net worth individual, someone who has made enough money in their life that they're not likely to be, run off to the poorhouse by a poor investment. They're considered by the SEC to be savvy investors that know how to put their money to work. And the SEC is mainly interested in protecting the small investor from being duped into putting all their money into a penny stock or something like that. So as a result, angels really, the sole requirement is that they be accredited, and that makes puts them in a class of a person that is considered to be they're considered to know enough about the investment world that they can protect themselves, not that they need the SEC to protect them.
So they're not regulated by the SEC?
Not really. It's regulated. There are some very stringent rules and laws that have to do with securities fraud, that have to do with the way a company can solicit investment and the way a company can take on investors. In that sense, there's quite a careful regulation, but the angel investor, him or herself, is not really regulated by the SEC.
Hmm. And in terms of venture capital investment, is that increasing here in the state?
Absolutely. We've, of course, had some very good success stories at the other end of the investment cycle. We've been talking here mostly about the very early, out-of-the-box kind of company, but I'm sure a lot of people have heard about the TomoTherapy initial public offering. That's a classic example of how investments over actually a period of about 10 years by angel investors initially, but also by very early stage venture capital, and then later by more traditional venture capital, those have attracted a lot more interest in this region in terms of venture capital investment. We're fortunate here in Madison to have some venture capital interests that are very eager and willing to work with very early stage companies. So I don't mean to say the game is just purely angels, because we've had some very strong venture capital activities. And in fact, TomoTherapy was really made possible by investments by a Madison-based venture capital firm, Venture Investors. Mm-hmm. Without them, the whole story wouldn't even be there.
I've heard it said that a place like Madison needs a home run. People sometimes say Microsoft, which is huge, but is the success of a company like TomoTherapy, is it sort of success breeds success?
Absolutely. It's probably a little early to. I mean, certainly TomoTherapy is a home run in that there's been some investors that have been able to see their way to a profitable exit. But I think the story is really just beginning on the potential of TomoTherapy. The technology is fascinating, and people talk about the real impact of the company. It's not so much the financial side, but it's the cancer outcomes. They have a remarkable capability of reducing side effects associated with radiation therapy. And I think as the time goes by, we'll see more of the published clinical evidence of how good this technology really is. That's where we'll kind of really see the home run potential. But again, it's not really just one company. It certainly helps to have one that is recognizable name, but we also have had in the last few years some other companies that have sold and generated attention. Genzyme has purchased Bone Care International, and Vitrogen ultimately became owner of Panvera, and just recently Roche acquired Nimblegen Systems. Sigma Aldrich acquired Tetrionic. So there's actually a fairly large number, well, there's a good number of companies that are surfacing in the eyes of the all of those acquiring companies I mentioned are major players in the world of biotech, and they're known around the world. And so I think Madison is showing up on the radar screen of these companies as well as on the venture capital. We won recently in the bioenergy area. There was an announcement that the university, in conjunction with Michigan State University, won a $125 million award from the Department of Energy to develop a cellulosic biomass for use in biofuels. That announcement has generated tremendous interest from the venture capital community, largely on the West or the East Coast. And they know that there's only a couple other centers like this in the country. One of them, coincidentally, is in Berkeley. And so they're familiar with what's going on with the energy initiatives there. And now they learn all of a sudden that, gee, there's this place out in the Midwest, which is doing some really interesting stuff as well. So we've had a kind of a steady troop of people coming through town wanting to learn more about it. So I think it's a bunch of things that contribute to elevating our success, not just a company that hit it big, but I think a whole bunch of things that are, I think, basically evidence the maturing of the ecosystem for supporting high-tech companies here.
So are we no longer flyover country?
I don't think we're quite to that point, I had a conversation with one of the venture capital partners that came out here to visit, and he commented that, you know, their office is in Menlo Park. He says they don't think anything of jumping on a plane to go to Mumbai or to Beijing. But at the same time, they're starting to realize that it's actually a lot easier to come to Madison, even far fewer hours on the plane, even though you may have to change planes in Minneapolis or somewhere.
Yeah. If you're an angel investor and say, to pick a number out, and you put $10 million if you put $1 million in a company, what kind of a return can you expect to get if it say to go back to TomoTherapy?
The big trick with angel investing is, I think, similar to what they advise most investors who invest in public markets, and that is that you need to have a diversified portfolio. So any one investment, I think an angel investor likes to think that there's going to be maybe a 10x return or a 5x return in 5 years. The criteria that I think the angels look at is not all that different from the return expectations that a venture capital firm would look at. In fact, one might argue that they would be even higher expectations of return just because they're taking...
Angels
are taking it earlier.
Right.
They're getting in earlier. They're taking a greater risk. But again, the trouble is, of course, nobody's got perfect vision. The angels certainly don't. The venture capital firms certainly don't. And so in order to maximize their returns, they really need to be making multiple investments. And most of the VCs are well aware of this. They typically start a fund and they plan to make maybe a dozen or a couple of dozen investments in firms over the life of that fund. I think the trick with angel investing is the angels do need to recognize that importance of diversity, and they do need to be making several investments, maybe in different types of markets, maybe different types of technologies, whatever is going to suit their own investment criteria. But I think they need to make a few, because again, they can't expect that every company they invest in is going to become a TomoTherapy or a Nimblegen or something like that.
What is the rate of success for startups?
That's a tough question. I don't have the specific numbers at the top of my head here, but generally the expectation of a new company being formed for anything in this country, that the survival rate is very low. It's thought to be less than 1 in 10. I think if you look at the technology startups here in Madison, we've got a much, much higher survival rate. Now, they don't all become successful. They may become successful in the sense of a big exit outcome for investors. They may get to a certain level and have a level of business of a few million dollars a year, maybe a few tens of millions of dollars a year. For an angel or a VC investor, that may not be regarded as a success, but by the same token, from the standpoint of a new company that's meeting a need in the marketplace, is providing employment for people, whether they be here in Madison or somewhere else, that is a success, and that's not a bad thing. So I think if you think about it in the context of, maybe smaller, more modest sort of successes, we've got a pretty high rate of success. I'd say, potentially 50% or more in terms of the ones that become big success stories to the investment community. It's definitely smaller, but I would argue that it's probably still a lot bigger than that overall national average. I think part of the reason it's so much higher for the tech companies is there's so much more forethought that seems to go into them. We have, first of all, proprietary technology. Often people don't think about forming these companies unless there's a number of people encouraging them to do it. Friends, family, maybe other people in the university, other investor types, maybe our office. So there's a lot more guidance available to those people, and it's a fairly specialized guidance. So I think, in a sense, certainly not every technology is going to play out as well as the founders hope it will. But I think, in a general rule, we do have a fairly good percentage rate. This is one of the things we should do a study someday, if we ever get the time, to figure out just what is our hit rate. We've identified something like 235 companies that have come out of UW-Madison over the last 40 years or so. And I did a kind of a quick scan, and I discovered that something like 50% of those companies had received professional investment of some sort, either venture capital, angel, or they were acquired by another firm. So again, if you compare that to the overall averages for business startups all across the country, that's a substantially higher number. But at the same time, only 50%, clearly we're talking about a lot of companies there that are not investor-suitable opportunities. Investors tend to only put money into opportunities that are going to really return a big multiple. And there's a lot of good, solid businesses that are, you know, maybe some people call them lifestyle businesses, but give you an example, a professor perhaps from the engineering school may have a opportunity, may have a lot of knowledge about a particular segment of the market, may have developed specialized software that will meet some needs in that market, and maybe creates a company that employs maybe a dozen people, delivers a very useful service to a very small segment of the overall, let's say, market for manufacturing gizmos that are assisting in the manufacturing process. Again, a very complex market, but it doesn't have to be more than a few million dollars a year to produce the kind of good living for the people who are working at that company. So those are the companies that would never really get particularly well known, but we've got them. If you look through the MG&E high tech directory, you'll find another number of companies that are in that category. They're fairly small businesses, but ongoing, successful. They have products, and they meet important needs.
Are academics becoming more entrepreneurial? Has there been an attitude shift where people at the university think that they want to start businesses?
I would say that yes. Again, I don't have a good tangible study to cite for those numbers. So I came to Madison about 24 years ago, and I would say in the last 10 or 15 years, there's been a dramatic shift in the degree to which faculty recognize activity that they may undertake with outside businesses has a valuable role to play in their own activities as a professor. There's a certain group of faculty who would also actually look at a startup company maybe as a part of their career goals. At mm-hmm. some point they want to do that. Even those that don't, though, I think as a university we place a priority on our faculty having solid grounding in what's going on in what we call here in the university the real world. It's everything outside of the university. Mm-hmm. And that term is very much recognizes this distinction between the academic world and the rest of the world. And we do place a priority for faculty to be spending time on the outside so that they do understand the needs of industry, the needs that people have. It's a logical translation or transition for that sort of emphasis to segue over to more like a participation in a startup company. And today, I think, again, the statistics show that the vast majority of jobs are created by companies that are less than 10 years old, less than 6 years old. And increasingly, the big industry is basically a net loser of jobs, and small businesses tend to be the place where the new jobs are creating and are being created. And if you just look at some of the products on the shelves in Best Buy or in Circuit City these days, and think about, you know, 15 years ago, most of those products weren't even there. Hmm. It's all new technology, new companies, and the skills and the jobs to make those sorts of companies have really come on. So again, I think it goes back to the world is moving very quickly, technology is evolving quickly, and in order to stay current, in order for a university to be generating savvy graduates, of course, our faculty need to be connected with what's actually happening out there. So it all comes around. I think, you know, we're not encouraging outside activities just for the sake of helping people get rich. I think the key thing is this is what makes this institution a better place to get a bachelor's degree or a master's degree or a PhD, because we have faculty that are that understand the current realities of the outside world.
I think the figure that I saw was that the university gets about $750 million a year in federal funding for all kinds of research. Is that figure going to be declining?
Well, actually, the 700 and $70 million or whatever is not only federal research. It's mostly federal research, but a significant part of it does come from foundations, from some other sources, corporate sources in some cases, some state sources. So the aggregate number is, the question is, will that be declining? There's a lot of talk about how federal funding is declining. Federal support for R&D funding at universities is declining, and it only makes sense that that's going to make it certainly a lot more competitive. I've heard, again, anecdotally, we've heard stories that it's much harder now for some of our faculty to get some of those grants, particularly the younger faculty that have yet to establish themselves so well. We haven't seen that yet in the numbers. I suspect it may take a little while for that to happen. I don't necessarily see industry stepping up to fill in gaps where federal funding drops off. But again, it's certainly it's certainly evolving where this will be an increasing concern on the part of the university as to how we maintain that level of R&D growth. But I think most people recognize that it's not going to necessarily continue at the steep rate of gain that we've seen over the last 10 years.
Is one of the things that OCR does is build bridges with industry and corporations out there to support the university?
Yes, we do. Although that's probably not our major goal or our major activity. It seems that when we started the office, actually, we asked companies what they wanted, and what they told us was, well, we want to hire smart graduates, we want to improve our workforce, and so in a sense, that's our best product, really, here at this university, is the 10,000 degreed students that we turn out every year. So we help them in that regard, and kind of a preliminary way to do that is often to bring in interns. Executive and continuing education, again, there are some great programs here that help companies stay competitive. So in a sense, we don't really make a special purpose, a special point of going out and trying to arrange sponsored research agreements with big companies. Now, certainly if we identify that there are some companies that have some important needs, that we have some very capable researchers, we'll do the best we can to try to get those people connected and to generate that sort of interest. But I have to say that if we measured our success solely by the degree to which we bring in that outside sponsored research money from industry, we'd probably have a pretty tough job on our hands. And I can say that because I think there's so many other ways that we can really benefit industry that it's not that it doesn't matter, but it really compensates for that in a big way.
What did you do before you came here?
Actually, I joined the university in 2001. I had just sold a company. I had actually started two companies in the biotech space. Basically, one was an environmental biotech company, and the second was a company that provided toxicology testing services or testing products for use in drug discovery and lead optimization in the pharmaceutical industry. So I had started and grew and sold a couple of young companies in the high-tech space. Before that, I was with a startup company that had actually spun out of UW-Madison back in the early 80s and was with them for a period of years. Before that, I was with Booz Allen Hamilton in Bethesda, Maryland, working in the high-tech consulting arena.
So this is old hat for you?
I've been involved in the issue of mixing business with technology, business, and science for probably 25 years. So it's something that you never get tired of. And it's fascinating working here at the university because there's just such diversity. So many, I don't know, some people say, well, we've got an expert in everything, but the fact is we've got a very, very talented faculty. We have a very broad base of science expertise. And so there's never a shortage of new ideas, and So it's a lot of fun to be able to be a part of that and to be able to help move some of those ideas into the marketplace.
Just in the time you've been with OCR, would you say that the number of companies being created has accelerated?
Yeah, I would say so. We went, of course, again, it's all timing, but when I joined the university in 2001, again, that was right after the stock market had collapsed, that was right after the bubble burst. A lot of investors retrenched in 2001, 2002, 2003, and there wasn't a whole lot going on. I think the response to that by faculty or by people thinking about startups was pretty much like, well, there's no money available, so why should I rush into this? And what's happened since 2003 and 4 is we've seen investors coming back into the marketplace, and as a result of that, we see more and more ideas that are actually popping out in the form of companies. So I think right now we are seeing a growth in the number of startups. This little program we're doing in Milwaukee on the 24th is a good example. When I scanned around and looked for potential companies that might present, I thought there were a reasonable number, but the number that actually applied once we sent out the word probably doubled what I was expecting we'd see. So there's a lot of new ones right now that are just getting going. Some very exciting ones. We may have the future tomotherapy right here in our midst, but it'll be maybe 10 years before we get to sort of beat our chests about how great it was that we did all this.
Is there anything I didn't ask you about what you're doing that you'd like to add?
Oh, gee, I think you've covered it very well. I think this whole area of entrepreneurship is of great importance to us as a society. It's certainly important to the university. I think one thing I haven't touched on is it's not all just about technology commercialization. We have a grant from the Kauffman Foundation, and we are one of the quote-unquote Kauffman campuses. Kauffman has a program where they're interested in getting universities to broaden the access to and awareness of entrepreneurship across their entire student body. So we're very pleased to be working with that program, and we've been working with a number of groups and organizations all over the campus here. We've opened up some of our communication programs here to really attract students from all over the campus. So we're working with undergraduate students, we're working with students in the arts, students in the humanities, students in journalism, just wherever. And we're discovering there's a tremendous tremendous enthusiasm for an interest in taking an idea, making something of value with it, and implementing it. And that's at essence what entrepreneurship is all about. So, you know, it can be for a business that makes money, but it can also be for a social need, some kind of an organization or entity that meets a social need. It can be artistic, it can be scientific. So we're very excited about that, and in the broadest sense, we're looking at startups coming out of student ideas as well as student startups coming out of technology accomplishments.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Well, do you think